is 1967 by Paul Durkin. To Catherine. I awoke with a pain in my head and my mother standing at the end of the bed. "There's bad news in the paper," she said. "Patrick Kavanagh is dead." After a week which was not real, at last I settled down to a neutral meal. I was sitting over a pint and a beef sandwich in Mooney's across the street from the rotunda. By accident I happened to tune in to the conversation at the table from me. I heard an old Northsetter tell to his missus, "He was a pure straight, God rest him, not like us."
Durkin gets the first, as Kavanagh mentioned in there, first two poets of the evening. Next up, Tina Piskor.
This is a poem called Forgetfulness by Billy Collins, an American poet who's been a poet laureate. The name of the author is the first to go, followed obediently by the title, the plot, the heartbreaking conclusion, the entire novel, which suddenly becomes one you have never read, never even heard of. As if, one by one, the memories you used to harbor decided to retire to the southern hemisphere of the brain, to a little fishing village where there are no phones. Long ago, you kissed the names of the nine muses goodbye and watched the quadratic equation pack its bag. And even now, as you memorize the order of the planets, something else is slipping away. A state flower, perhaps, the address of an uncle, the capital of Paraguay. Whatever it is you're struggling to remember, it is not poised on the tip of your tongue, not even lurking in some obscure corner of your spleen. It has floated away down a dark mythological river whose name begins with an L, as far as you can recall, well on your way to oblivion, where you will join those who have even forgotten how to swim and how to ride a bicycle. No wonder you rise in the middle of the night to look up the date of a famous battle in a book on war. No wonder the moon in the window seems to have drifted out of a love poem that you used to know by heart.
Thanks, Tina. There's a great animation of that poem on YouTube, if you look it up on YouTube.
Is there?
Yes, animated, it's wonderful. Next up, Gemma.
This is called Long Distance 2 by Tony Harrison. So my mother was already 2 years dead. Dad kept her slippers warming by the gas, put hot water bottle at her side of the bed, and still went to renew her transport pass. You couldn't just drop in, you had to phone. He put you off an hour to give him time to clear away her things and live alone, as though his still raw love were such a crime. He couldn't risk my blighted disbelief, though sure that very soon he'd hear her key scrape in the rusted lock and end his grief. He knew she'd just popped out to get the tea. I believe life ends with death, and that is all. You haven't both gone shopping. Just the same, in my new black leather phone book, save your name and the disconnected number I still call.
Thank you, Gemma. Next we have Joe Sweeney.
This is a poem by a minor poet called W.B. Yeats. It's called In Memory of Eva Gore Booth and Con Markiewicz. The light of evening, Lissa Down. Great windows open to the south. Two girls in silk kimonos, both beautiful, one a gazelle. But a raving autumn shears blossom from the summer's wreath, The older is condemned to death, pardoned, dragged out lonely years, inspiring among the ignorant. I know not what the younger dreams, some vague utopia. And she seems, when withered old and skeleton gaunt, an image of such politics. Many a time I think to seek one or the other out and speak of that old Georgian mansion, mix pictures of the mind, recall that table and the talk of youth, two girls in silk kimonos, most beautiful, one gazelle. Dear shadows, now you know it all the folly of a fight, the common wrong or right, the innocent and the beautiful have no enemy but time. Arise and bid me strike a match and strike another till time catch. Should the conflagration climb, run till all the sages know, we the great gazebo built, they convicted us of guilt. Bid me strike a match and blow.
Thanks, Joe and William. And next up, Stefano Riodoro.
Never thought I'd be following you. Well, I'm not really. Gary Schneider. I went into the Maverick Baron. I went into the Maverick Baron in Farmington, New Mexico, and drank double shots of bourbon backed with beer. My long hair was tucked up under a cap. I left the earring in the car. Two cowboys did horseplay by the pool. A waitress asked us, "Where are you from?" A country and western band began to play "We Don't Smoke Marijuana in Wasoki." And with the next song, a couple began to dance. They held each other like in high school dances in the 50s. I recall when I worked in the woods and the bars of Mardas, Oregon. The short-haired joy and roughness. America, your stupidity. I could almost love you again. We left onto the freeway shoulders under the tough old stars. In the shadow of bluffs, I came back to myself, to the real work, to what is to be done.
Thanks, Steve. Next up, Jennifer Matthews.
Hey. So this is by a two-time visitor for Ovail, Anne Maria Cruz-Serrano. Called Identity. These words, bricks of babble, stacked in streets of my tongue, the syntax wobbles, sounding nothing like the rhapsody it was meant to be. An architecture of uncertainty mispronounces the simpler words, sputtering dissonance, stressing places between plosives. The broken machinery grinds inside the cranium, murders meaning. My native tongue translates as relating or belonging to a person or thing, a member of an indigenous people, glottal, lingual, a movable mass of muscular tissue. My native tongue flaps and clanks unoiled, abandons me to the gibberish of a person or thing abstracted, an indigenous us, forked and floundering under the weight of silence.
Next, we have Brian McElroy.
Forgive me for my weakness. the times you walked on your own, asking in laptop grade. I ignored you for a client who always spelled my name wrong. Forgive me for my ignorance. The day of the envelope, when you were different, by being too much the same to me, for I was indifferent to you. Forgive me for my blindness. The day you lit candles at noon, stood naked next to them, and asked me if you were beautiful, saying my full name. Forgive me for my shape, for shaking. The day you told me was a Sunday. Later you said you had waited for a frost, just like the first walk you ever took, when there was bonfire and love in my eyes. Forgive me for hating you. The day you lost your hair, refusing to wear a headscarf, choosing to wear the elements, the wind, the rain, and when we kissed, smiled. Forgive me for loving you too much. The day I bring you to the end, notice everything I hadn't done, except for the only thing you wanted, to dance with you to Gerard. You went in my arms from the first breath. I'll never forgive you for that.
Next up, we have Mary Brennan.
This is another Anthony Owen poem that's called Divorced Children. You learned from your duvet that your mother had left, wanting detergent to smell so she could comfort you. The 70s woodchip lamp blowing through the gap in the door she left. You learned from the kitchen that your dad would stay to pick up the pieces that were you and Simon, who'd wet himself for soft hands, while you and the compensatory dolls waited for the gap in the door to creep again. You learned how to raise yourself, then later on there were lovers who loved themselves through you. Affection was an exorcism, ending in a slam door and a gap in your life. You learned from your dad that your mum was a whore, that lies were shouts, truths were whispers, and children forced to be adults dragged across the common in shoes too small for them and lives too big for them. I learned from you that life is the shoes you wore, that I can never fill them the way you do my heart.
Thanks, Mary. Now can we have Aaron Lewis.
Placidly amid the noise and hate, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and ignorant, they too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons, they are vexatious to the spirit. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for this world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself, especially do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of your years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune, but do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness, beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You're a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be. Whatever your labours and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul with all its sham, drudgery and broken dreams. It is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful. Strive to be happy. Happy. That's the bottom.
Mary O'Connell.
Well, WB is getting a second outing. I'll read the Second Coming, which I think is kind of appropriate for the time that's in it. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The centre cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the Second Coming is at hand. The Second Coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a mocking cradle, and what rough beast. Its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born.
Thank you, Mary. Next up we have Alma Kelly.
This is called Madly Singing in the Mountains. It's by Ho Chu Ai, or something like that. There is no one among men that has not a special failing, and my failing consists in writing verses. I have broken away from the thousand ties of life, but this infirmity still remains behind. Each time that I look at a fine landscape, each time that I meet a loved friend, I raise my voice and recite a stanza of poetry, and am glad as though a god has crossed my path. Ever since the day I was banished to Sunyang, half my time I have lived among the hills, and often when I have finished a new poem, alone I climb the road to the eastern rock. I lean my body on the banks of a white stone. I pull down with my hands a green cassia branch. My mad singing startles the valleys and hills. The apes and birds all come to peep, fearing to become a laughing stock to the world. I choose a place that is unfrequented by men.
Thanks, Alma. Next, Sue Cosgrave.
I'm going to read two short poems. Both of them are about 4.5 thousand years old. They're both from the city of Qom in southern Iraq, and the first one was written by a woman, unknown woman, as an offering to the goddess Inanna, the goddess of love, and was left in the temple. It was just fragments found there, and fairly erotic.
Fairly.
Take my bulba, my star-sketched horn of the dipper, moor my slender bolt of heaven, my new moon crescent beauty. I wait an unplowed desert, fallow field for the wild ducks, my high mound bones for the floodland. My vulva hill is open. This maid asks, who will plow it? Vulva moist in the floodlands. The queen asks, who will bring the ox? The king lady will plow it. The moose and king will plow it. Plow then, man of my heart. Holy water bathed by lions, my loins. Holy Ningal am I. Okay. And the next one could have been written for Naama and the bankers and the politicians of this age. I think it's probably written by a man who also lived about 4,500 years ago. And it's Reflections on Power. When you commit a crime out of weakness, the Tigris will bear it away. When you commit a crime from a position of power, heaven itself will forsake you. When you get away, you are a wild bull. When they catch you, you fall like a dog. You can't jump a ditch when you're lame.
Thank you, Sue. Next up we have Marie Kirby.
Jennifer Matthews, Rufus. The prophet's lips promised escape, a birth in reverse. Its roots curled like beckoning fingers. I plucked it, shaking the clinging dirt from the roof, and the ground ripped open for me. Through the gash, a dark man came, and I dove into his river to my marriage bed. Neglect withered the world behind me, above me. My twin mother's grief took every living thing hostage. Underworld, I sucked pulpy seeds, nails hooked in the rind of my husband's fruit. Juice seeping in sordid rivers down my chin. Witness would return to advise her. This was no kidnapping.
Where the kittens came from. Thank you, Marie. Could we please have China Harrington?
Thanks, Paul. And another poem by a woman again. I think they're the majority now. This is by Stevie Smith, better known for not waving, not drawing. But this is another one called Emily Writes Such a Good Letter. Mabel was married last week, so now only Tom left. The doctor didn't like Arthur's cough. I've been in bed since Easter, a touch of the old trouble. I'm downstairs today. As I write this, I can hear Arthur roaming overhead. He loves to roam. Thank heavens he has plenty of space to roam in. We have 7 bedrooms and an annex, which leaves a flat for the chauffeur and his wife. We have much to be thankful for. The new vicar came yesterday. People say he brings a breath of fresh air. He leaves me cold. I do not think he's a gentleman. Yes, I remember Morris very well. Fancy getting married at his age. She must be a fool. You knew May had moved? Since Edward died, she has been much alone. It was cancer. No, I know nothing of Maud. I never wish to hear her name again. In my opinion, Maud is an evil woman. Our char has left, and a good riddance too. Wages are very high in Tonbridge. Write and tell me how you are, dear. And the girls, Phoebe and Rose, they must be a great comfort to you. Phoebe and Rose.
Thanks, James. Next we have Rosalind Blue.
I'd like to pay a tribute to someone who's actually quite famous in Germany, Anne Clark. She's from England, her mum's from Ireland. I followed her quite a bit. She's not only a poet but also a musician, and she has a wonderful way of putting her poetry over the music and reading it over the music in a really nice way. And she does a kind of a techno music and also classical, so it's really nice. She published this book which she launched in Hanover. I was at the launch, which was an honour. And I'd like to read the poet's turmoil, number 364. Keep me back in the real world from which we try to run. Music and words don't mean anything through the barrel of the gun. A poem cannot heal a wound. Books won't help you find that something which you're looking for, but just add questions to the mind. Tell me now in black and white what you're supposed to do when fists and knives and sticks and boots come raining down on you. A painted picture on a wall can't justify a life when the weak and poor cannot escape their ugliness and strife. The actor is a bridge of words leading us to nowhere, dressed in costumes to disguise the reality of despair. The poet's turmoil strikes again as once more words they fail me. Another bomb has just supplied the cross on which to nail me.
Thanks, Russell. And next up, could we have Rosie O'Regan?
I disagree. I think the poem can help heal a wound. I think poems are medicine. And this one is by Ben Johnson. I can't remember the title, but I suppose I know it because it came to my mother the morning my nephew passed away. Anniversary recently. It is not growing like a tree in bulk doth make man better be, nor standing long an oak 300 year to fall a log at last, dry, bald, and sere. A lily of the day is fairer far in May. What though a droop and die that night, it is the plant and flower of light. In small proportions we just beauty see, and in short measure life may perfect be.
Thanks, Randy. Next up, could we have Billy Russell?
I'd like to say The Head of an Irish Woman by Michael Hartnett. Ignorant in the sense she ate monotonous food and thought the world was flat. And pagan in the sense she knew the things that moved all night were neither dogs nor cats, but hobgoblins and dark-faced men. She nevertheless had fierce pride. But sentenced in the end to tin diminishing porridge in a stone-cold kitchen, her frail hands crasped round the world she could not understand. I loved her from the day she died. She was a summer dance at the crossroads. She was a song that nobody sings. She was a card game where a nose was broken. She was a language that is seldom spoken. She was a house that was ransacked by soldiers. She was a child's purse full of useless things.
Thanks, buddy. Next up, so we have Alvin Garvey.
The gift to wait for Casey on at least the microphone now. Before I knew about Cork or Oveil or the Multi Literature Centre, I came across a poem by Gregory O'Donoghue, and it's a poem I love a lot. From a Sophia notebook. Always you surprise me, but never more than when you announced your number is 9. I've read enough to know this is so. Allow myself a superstitious pride in it. 3 times 3, magical mystery number. 9s are rare, and I was only guessing and answering. It takes one to know one. You smiles, I smiles. 2 9s are 18. In numerology, that is 9. You went on. Your colours are grey and black. You know, silvery grey with dark bits like a feather shed from a painted pigeon. I know the colours of the moon, white, red and black, but not my own. Perhaps they alter with moods and seasons. Always easier to spy colours of others, yours, silver and black. Our days nearing their end. Alone I wander streets around the bulbous golden onion domes of Alexandra Nevsky, searching for the right gift. Find a bracelet of silver with studs of black onyx. Silver for your silver tongue. Black for your storm of dusky curls and eyes the bluish black of ripe olives. The jeweller, looking at me asking, goes with my wishes.
Remove the 10th stud. Thanks, Oliver. Next up, could we have Fee?
Now, Edward is the curious man. Well into his allotted span, each evening finds him in the park, happy in the semi-dark. By day he checks his chosen site, he lurks there in the fading light, to stare still each approaching smasher. The fact is, Edward is a flasher. For years, this hobby he's pursued, well aware that it is rude. But standing there, his knees like jelly, it's better than just watching telly. sometimes, consuming rapture hampers his escape from capture. But still, he gets a certain buzz when he is picked up by the fuzz. There was a time some years ago when certain ladies in the know would creep along from tree to tree just to see what they might see. But so long he pursued his goal, the time began to take its toll, and now it's plain for all. He's not the man he used to be. Some cheeky girls, when they pass by, no boldly look him in the eye. But there's a better still way off than those who only look at love. Each winter, when the winds grow higher, he wonders if he should retire. But then the spring is drawing near. Yeah. He speaks it out for another year.
Thank you, B. Next up, we have Patricia Walsh.
Thank
Thank you, Paul. This poem is written by George Herbert and called The Collar. And it's kind of, I know you've been working on something, it's just, geez, why am I bothering, you know? So, is this. The Collar. I struck the board and cried no more, I will abroad. What, shall ever sigh and pine? My lines in life are free, free as the road, loose as the wind that guards the door. Shall I be in suit? Have I no harvest but a thorn, to let thee bleed and not restore, but I have loved the cordial fruit. Sure there was wine before my sighs to dry it, there was corn before my tears to drown it. Is a year only lost to me? Have I no beans to crown it? No flowers, no garlands gay, or blasted, or wasted? Not so, my heart, but there is truth, and thou hast hands. Recover all thy side-blown rage on double pleasures, leave thy cold dispute, and what is fit and not. Forsake thy cage, thy rope of sand, which petty thoughts have made, and made to thee, good cable to force and draw, and be thy law. While thou didst wink and would not see, away take heed, and will abroad. Call in thy death's head here, tie up thy fears. He that forbears to suit and serve his need deserves his load. But as I raved and grew more face, fierce and wild, at every word, methought I heard one calling, child, now replied, my lord.
Thank you, Patricia. Next we have Alan Cogan.
So, an old poem that I heard ages ago, I just came across an anonymous book there, so I'll just share it. Timothy Winters.
Oh!
Timothy Winters comes to school with eyes as wide as a football pool. Ears like bombs and teeth like blisters, a fifth of a boy is Timothy Winters. His belly is white, his neck is dark, and his hair is an exclamation mark. His clothes are enough to scare a crow, and through his breeches the cold winds blow. When teacher talks, he won't hear a word, and he shoots down dead the arithmetic birds. He licks the passions off his plate, and he's not even heard of the welfare state. Timothy Winters has bloody feet, and he lives in a house in Seward Street. He sleeps in a sack on the kitchen floor, and they say there aren't boys like him anymore. And we're still saying it. Old man Winters likes his beer, and his missus ran off with the bombardier. Grandma sits in the grate of the gin, and Timothy is dosed with an aspirin. Or maybe Prozac, this is. The welfare worker lies awake, but the law's as tricky as a 10-foot snake. So Timothy Winters drinks his cup and slowly goes on growing up. At morning prayers, the master helps for children less fortunate than ourselves. And the loudest response in the room is when Timothy Winters roars, Amen. So come on, angel, come on, ten. Timothy Winters says, Amen. Amen, 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 amen. Timothy Winters, Lord, Amen.
Thank you, Alan. Is there anyone out there who hasn't said a poem, who'd like to say a poem from someone else in the universe except themselves? Anyone else at all? No. We were going to go for two rounds, but there's no way we're going to get two rounds in. There's like 5 minutes left. And I have a poem.
What about yourself?
Yeah, would you mind?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Okay, this is slightly long, okay? And it's called The Cauldron of Poesy, and it's a translation of a tract that was written apparently about 1200 BC by Armugan MacMill. He was one of the sons of Mill. And this is an instruction for people who are learning how to write poetry, or for poets indeed. My true cauldron of incubation, it has been taken by the gods from the mysteries of the elemental abyss, a fitting decision that ennobles one from one's center, that pours forth a terrifying stream of speech from the mouth. I am Amrigan, white knee, pale of substance, grey of hair, accomplishing my incubation in proper poetic forms, in diverse colour. The gods do not apportion the same to everyone, tipped, inverted, right side up. No knowledge, half knowledge, full knowledge. For Eber and Dom, the making of fearful poetry, vast, mighty drafts of death spells, in active voice, in passive silence, in the neutral balance between, in the proper construction of rhyme. In this way, it narrates the path and function of my cauldron. I sing the cauldron of wisdom, which bestows the merit of every art, through which treasure increases, which magnifies every common artisan, which builds up a person through their gift. Where is the root of poetry in a person? In the body or in the soul? They say it is in the soul, for the body does nothing without the soul. Others say it is in the body where the arts are learned, passed through the bodies of our ancestors. It is said this is the seat of what remains over the root of poetry, and the good knowledge in every person's ancestry comes not into everyone, but comes into every other person. What then is the root of poetry and every other wisdom? Not hard. Three cauldrons are born in every person, i.e., the cauldron of incubation, the cauldron of motion, and the cauldron of wisdom. The cauldron of incubation is born upright in a person from the beginning. It distributes wisdom to people in their youth. The cauldron of motion, however, after turning, increases. That is to say, it is born tipped on its side in a person. The cauldron of wisdom is born on its lips, upside down, and it distributes wisdom in every art besides, in addition to poetry. The cauldron of motion, then, in every other person, is on its lips, i.e. in ignorant people. It is side-slanting in people of barge craft and strokes for mid-level poetry. It is on its back in the great streams, the highest poetic grades of great wisdom and poetry. On account of this, not every mid-level person has it on its back, because the cauldron of motion must be turned by sorrow or by joy. Question. How many divisions of sorrow that turn the cauldron of sages? Not hard. Four. Longing, grief, the sorrows of jealousy, and the discipline of pilgrimage to holy places. It is internally that these are born, although the cause is not from outside. There are then two divisions of joy that turn the cauldron of wisdom, i.e., divine joy and human joy. In human joy, there are four divisions among the wise. Sexual intimacy, the joy of health untroubled by the abundance of goading when a person takes up the prosperity of bardcraft. The joy of the binding principle of wisdom after good poetic construction. And joy of fitting poetic frenzy from the grinding away at the fair nuts of the nine hazels on the well of Sagus in the She realm. They cast themselves in great quantities like a ram's fleece upon the ridges of the Boyne, moving against the stream swifter than racehorses, driven in the middle month of the magnificent day every 7 years. The gods touch a person through divine and human joys so that they are able to speak prophetic poems and dispense wisdom and perform miracles, as well as offering wise judgments and giving precedence and wisdom in answer to everyone's wishes. But the source of these joys, the gods, is outside the person, although the actual cause of the joy is internal. I sing of the cauldron of motion, understanding grace, accumulating knowledge, streaming poetic inspiration as milk from the breast. It is the tide water of knowledge, union of sages, stream of sovereignty, the glory of the lowly, mastery of words, swift understanding, reddening satire, craftsman of histories, cherishing pupils, looking after binding principles, distinguishing the intricacies of language, moving towards music, propagation of good wisdom, enriching nobility, ennobling non-nobles, exalting names, relating praises through the working of law, comparing of ranks, pure weighing of nobility, with fair words of the wise, with streams of sages, the noble brew in which it boils the true roots of all knowledge, which bestows after duty, which is climbed after diligence, which poetic ecstasy sets in motion, which joy turns, which is revealed through sorrow, it is lasting power and diminishing protection. I sing of the cauldron of motion. What is this motion? Not hard, an artistic turning, or artistic after-turning, or artistic journey, i.e. it bestows good wisdom and nobility and honor after turning. The cauldron of motion bestows, is bestowed, extends, is extended, nourishes, is nourished, magnifies, is magnified, invokes, is invoked, sings, is sung, preserves, is preserved, arranges, is arranged, supports, is supports, is supported. Good is the well of measuring. Good is the dwelling of speech. Good is the confluence of power which builds up strength. It is greater than every domain. It is better than every inheritance. It brings one to knowledge, adventuring away from ignorance. Thank you. And thank you all. Really, this has been a great night. And happy birthday to us, to our band.